If the play wasn't meant to suggest a change in government, then we have an amazing coincidence given its plot. So in a nutshell then, Lysistrata is simply saying it's time for a change. Imagine if we women took over the polis, we could run it more effectively. We would run it like we would run our homes. And she's also saying about corruption, we could take the dirt that is now Athenian society, that is now the corruption in that society, and we could spin it like we do with wool and produce something that's clean, that's non-corrupt. And it's this change in regime, of course, that the Athenians will experience in a few months' time. Is it a coincidence then that at the heart of this play, at the heart of this anti-war play, is a change in regime? This is really what Lysistrata is advocating, that women are going to run the state, not men. It's also Alcibiades who's at the core of things. Alcibiades was now living with the satrap of Sardis, a man called Tissaphernes. Now, this same Tissaphernes had made an alliance with Sparta sometime before. But Alcibiades now let it be known, in Athens that is, that he could persuade Tissaphernes to ally with the Athenians and to give them money to use against Sparta. Given that the Athenians were financially hard-pressed at this time, this would have been music to their ears. But of course, there was a condition. Alcibiades could only get Tissaphernes on board if Athens was an oligarchy. And then, if he, Alcibiades, were recalled. It's beautiful, isn't it? The Persians favored oligarchies, you see. And so, if Athens were an oligarchy, the Persians might well come over to the side of the Athenians. They weren't right now because of the direct democracy. Now, Tissaphernes, of course, wouldn't do any of these things that Alcibiades said he would, but by the time the Athenians found this out, it was too late. And so we move to the third and final part of my lecture, the oligarchy of 411. Isn't there a lot going on in this couple of years? In June of 411, an Athenian named Peisander engineered a bloodless coup in Athens, and he did this with the approval of the Assembly, because it was the Assembly that voted to set up a committee of 400 with absolute power to govern Athens. And this oligarchy, which is what it is, this oligarchy is commonly called the rule of the 400. Now, it's hard to believe that the people in the Assembly would do this, that they would vote to do themselves out of a job and establish an oligarchy. This is the same people who stood behind the Boule in 508 to expel Cleomenes of Sparta and Isagoras from Athens because they wanted a democracy, remember. It's these same people who supported Ephialtes over Cimon. But we'll see in a couple of minutes' time that the composition of this assembly, the one that voted for the 400, was quite different from the good old days. And this helps us understand why the people abolished themselves, so to speak. There are some affinities with the Solonian constitution here. First, the Committee of 400 echoes the Boule of 400. Then there is the power lying in the hands of the moderates. These would be the hoplite class, as opposed to the mass of the poorer people, who would be the thetes. In fact, the thetes were disfranchised in 411 BC because the 400 instituted a wealth requirement as the basis of citizenship. And we know that only 5,000 Athenians met the requirement for citizenship. The thetes didn't.